My name is Andrew Kate.
And my name is Ryan Capuano.
And welcome to another edition of the Death of Cinema podcast. In today's episode, the burden of doing this podcast is alleviated with our reviews of Edgar Wright's Baby Driver and Bong Joon-ho's Okja.
And we begin with Edgar Wright's kinetic, music-driven action film. Edgar Wright is a director who has proven many times over his career that he is quite adroit at action. But here he really just like steps it up to a different level. And I guess what's most striking about the film is that each action scene is choreographed to like a 4/4 beat for the song that's playing in the background. And obviously the film starts with John Spencer Blues Explosion's Bell Bottoms, which was is just such an amazing song. Unfortunately, I had the fact that was... the opening track spoil for me going in, otherwise I probably would have stood up and cheered in the theater. But this is Edgar Wright once again, it just completely brings it. The guy, if Hot Fuzz is his weakest movie, I think this guy is one of the top filmmakers in Hollywood. But just with this it feels almost like a little bit more personal to him. Obviously there are stories out there about how, you know, he used to walk around in the early 90s and like envision, while he was listening to these songs, envisioning maybe, you know, an action film curated to this almost. So it's interesting how the film almost serves the music in a way, but it just strikes this unbelievable tone, and every actor in this completely nails their part. I think you know, everyone from Ansel Elgort to John Hamm, Jamie Foxx are all just have such a domineering presence and such a command over the material. And obviously I think a lot of that comes from the trust in the director, Edgar Wright. But I'm going to turn it over to you now, because I know you have something very specific to say.
Well, I mean, you mentioned a few of the obviously great actors in this film, and I just wanted to talk about Jamie Foxx a little bit, because for me, I think he's the main highlight of this film, and I think he as an actor oftentimes gets taken for granted.
Absolutely.
Because he's so good, and obviously not all filmmakers use him correctly. There was a movie that early this year, I think it was called like Sleepless, and it's a kind of movie like Jamie Foxx is better than doing stuff like this, you know? And in this film, his charisma just naturally comes off the screen with his character Bats, this sort of criminal who's part of the heist crews that Kevin Spacey's criminal boss uses. And he's just so good with his, from that, in particular in that diner scene where, I mean, obviously there's going to be some thoughts in here that may be considered spoilerish, so I'll just mention that here. But there's a scene in the diner where Baby's sort of out on the job and he's with this criminal crew. And it's sort of, you know, impinging on his sort of ordinary world. He always goes to this diner and interacts with the waitress who is his girlfriend. And I mean, this scene, I don't know, the tension is really good, but it's also very comedic, obviously, in a way, and it just totally works. And I really don't think many actors can pull off that exact kind of acting that Jamie Foxx does in that scene. And I think he's just great throughout. And obviously, I have to mention John Hamm, who we both have huge man crushes on. I mean, one of the best actors alive, if only for his performance as Don Draper on Mad Men. I mean, here he's used well as the sort of central villain, as it sort of turns out to be. But, you know, what's really interesting about John Hamm's presence in this film is Edgar Wright specifically wrote this character for him. Apparently they've been friends for many years, and he was sort of one of the only actors that has stayed involved with the project throughout, since, you know, the first read of the script to now. So it's definitely a credit to him finally at least getting to spread his wings a little bit in movie world, because he's certainly been underutilized up to this point.
Absolutely. And I think Edgar Wright is just such a guy who has a complete command over every single element and every single craft on these films, that everything really gets a chance to shine. And, you know, beyond the performances with the below the line work, I think it's an absolute miracle of the sound work and the film editing. I think this is the fact that such coherent action scenes were pieced together from this much kinetic information. There's such a tense tone and like genuine suspense in this. This isn't, you know, obviously this isn't a straight comedy, and there's a lot less humor than what is in a typical Edgar Wright film, which I was actually surprised by. But what's replaced is like this real gravity to the events of what's going on. And the ending scene, the climactic action scene, is just unbelievably brutal and dark, and it really just catches you off guard. And I think credit has to be given to Bill Pope, the cinematographer, you know, famous for doing one of my favorite action films of all time, Spider-Man 2, and The Matrix as well. But he and Edgar Wright seem to be on the same page, and they really capture that nighttime Atlanta, and they catch the right lighting in the scenes, and it's really just like creates such an atmosphere, and it really just kind of chokes you in the theater. And I think, you know, part of that was actually, this was my first experience with the newfangled format Dolby Cinema, which I'm a huge, huge fan of. For those of you who don't know or aren't a total home theater geek like me, it includes Dolby Atmos surround sound, which includes the speakers in the ceiling, the butt kicker rumble things, the subwoofers that they throw in your chair, and every time there was a gunshot, it was like, you know, you could feel it. But it's really worth it. And obviously, you know, the picture quality with Dolby Vision was phenomenal. So I highly recommend, if you're anywhere near one of these theaters, go out of your way and see it in that particular format, even though it's probably already made way for Spider-Man now, but that's a different point. Anyway, I really do think that everything, this is a movie that I really hope gets remembered for Oscar time in these categories, especially the editing, and for sound mixing and sound editing as well.
Yeah, I was literally just going to bring up the editing, which has been a big part of all of Edgar Wright's work. He uses it mostly for comedic purposes in a lot of his previous films. I mean, it worked exceedingly well. I still think Scott Pilgrim vs. the World is one of the best edited films I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
And in this film, he certainly doesn't let up with that case. Obviously, with setting the action scenes to these songs, it really works. It just flows so, so well. And although I will say this isn't one of my absolute favorite Edgar Wright films, I feel like, you know, I really need to see it again, because I feel like the first time with an Edgar Wright movie, sometimes you're just experiencing it, and then the second time you really get an appreciation for all that there is to offer. It's definitely a very enjoyable film, definitely very inventive, and honestly, I'm just happy that Edgar Wright finally has a big box office hit here in North America, because it finally happened, you know, one of the few movies that is actually outperforming this year at the box office. Gee, I wonder why. Isn't there so many quality blockbusters out there? But I definitely recommend Baby Driver. It's definitely one of the better action films of the year, or of the last few years, without question.
Yeah, definitely. It kind of, I got that same sense of excitement that I did when, you know, Paul Greengrass jumped on the Jason Bourne movies, when there was this actual sense of craft behind it that's going, not, you know, obviously no disrespect to Doug Liman, but it really just, it brought things into a different level. And I think what I found most incredible about this is that, with the exception of, you know, a couple obvious shots, most of the stunt work in this film and the car chases were done practically, which is absolutely miraculous in this day and age that they were able to pull that off. And to that end, the stunts have a real sense of danger to them. I don't know if it's just, you know, great camera work or what the hell it was, but everything, like, there were times where I legitimately feared for the lives of the actors.
Yeah, and obviously you can go on YouTube and watch many interviews where they talk about Edgar Wright always constantly talking about the experience of, like, a lot of times he was in these cars as they were being driven down the road, and he said the experience was like nothing else. And, you know, it speaks to the kind of filmmaker he is, willing to put himself on there. Although, in his interviews, he's very self-deprecating about how maybe he wouldn't have done that if he knew that was going to be the case. But he's a filmmaker who's willing, you know, to take chances. And, you know, what's so great about Baby Driver is it is this, you know, original material from a filmmaker with a voice, as opposed to obviously a lot of the existing properties that are being adapted as blockbusters to theaters all across the world nowadays. So it's a real credit to Edgar Wright that he can take something unique. And it's definitely, as you mentioned, a bit more serious than his other work. And I think that may be a part of why I wasn't like ready to sing its praises, because I wasn't expecting that from Edgar Wright. But it's definitely a worthwhile film, really unique in a lot of different ways, from the editing, cinematography, action sequences, and obviously the cast is just top rate. But just a really fun film, and definitely a top tier film of the year for sure.
I would agree with that, and that's you know, I also wanted to briefly mention the central romance in the film, because this is just you know, between Baby and Deborah, and both performers are just so they feel there's this palpable chemistry between them. That's the most basic way I can put it, is that everything between them feels organic. Like, you could feel that these two people are actually genuinely attracted. They're both beautiful people, and they deserve to be in love, damn it. But just, it's given, you know, and it grounds the film. And obviously, you know, between Baby's character and who ends up being his foster father, a hearing impaired man who is handicapped, confined to a wheelchair as well. So there's really just some really nice, you know, it's a really nice twist on kind of like that wise old elder and it really just kind of gave the film a heart to it. And that, and that's, you know, Edgar Wright is obviously has his thumb on the pulse of his characters as well. Even something as benign as Shaun of the Dead has, you know, genuine emotion in it. And or even, you know, as you mentioned, Scott Pilgrim, and obviously to a more extreme extent, The World's End, which got into just such unbelievably dark places. And, you know, nothing and obviously that's just because, you know, thought, you know, mental health issues and alcoholism are a little bit more grounded in reality for a lot of people. And that's not to say what happens in Baby Driver isn't as dark, but there is also that, you know, arm's length distance that, like, first of all, I don't live in Atlanta, but it seems like there is a bank robbery and a massively violent car chase every single time. So to be able to have that distance to it actually doesn't make the drama hit quite as hard as some of you know, what was in The World's End, but it still it allows you to enjoy it in a completely different way.
Yeah, and in many ways, I just wanted to get back to the music for a second. You know, how this movie feels like a culmination of sort of all of Edgar Wright's use of music throughout the years in his other films, you know, from the classic scene in the Winchester, I believe, at the end of Shaun of the Dead. Obviously, used greatly in The World's End with the Alabama song. Mm-hmm. And obviously, Scott Pilgrim was centralized on a band. So he's used music throughout his career, and in this film, it feels like he's using all of that. You know, he's had those standalone sequences where some of the action meets up with the music, but here really feels like a culmination of all these things he sort of tried out throughout the years in his films that have worked on their own merits, and now he's using that sort of on this bigger scale. And obviously the film was a success at the box office, so thank God for that.
Seriously, and I honestly got to say this before we wrap up on the film, that with the exception of Don't Stop Me Now for the bar scene in Shaun of the Dead, I think my favorite use of music in a film of Edgar Wright's was actually in Hot Fuzz, when they went to go see the Romeo and Juliet, and they kind of closed out that play by singing Love Fool by the Cardigans. That was just such like a completely disarming moment for me, and as a big fan of that piece of late 90s pop kitsch, I greatly appreciated that little touch.
And I briefly just wanted to mention, there isn't too many big movie news stories, you know, that we found this week, but one of them connects to Baby Driver, and that's the fact that Sony has asked Edgar Wright to consider writing a sequel to Baby Driver. Ryan, I don't know if you have any initial thoughts on that idea.
You know, it's tough because I'm at the point where I realize the sequels are going to happen. When it comes to summer blockbusters, and, you know, I'll include, you know, Baby Driver in that very broad description, if it can keep me entertained for 2 hours, then I'm completely happy with it. If it can do more than that, then that's even better. I think Edgar Wright is probably the right guy to pull it off. I don't think the film needs a sequel. I don't think many films do need sequels. If we get one, I don't think it's going to be the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, and I'm pretty much there with you. Like, it's not something I need to have. Like, this feels like a film that works as a standalone thing. Edgar Wright doesn't feel like the filmmaker who would do a sequel, but obviously, you know, it's been an unprecedented box office success for him here in North America, so Sony obviously wants to capitalize on that. But at least, you know, Edgar Wright is considering it. He's not just jumping in, you know, right off the bat and agreeing to it without sort of considering, you know, the positives and negatives of that experience. But with that in mind, we'll transition to our second film that we're going to be discussing today, which is Bong Joon-ho's Okja, which is currently on Netflix, so it should be available to most of you, I'm sure. But for those of you who are not aware of this filmmaker, he's a great Korean filmmaker who's made some of my favorite films, Memories of Murder, the great monster movie The Host, which shares some DNA with Okja. But Okja is a story that centers on this little girl who has this friendship with this genetically engineered a giant pig sort of thing. And the film sort of focuses on her attempts to not allow Okja to be utilized for food. You know, and Tilda Swinton is playing these sort of dual weird roles at the head of this company who has created these monstrous pig things and sort of faking sort of to the public sort of this contest that, oh, who is the best, most beautiful pig or something like that, where in reality they're going to manufacture them for food, for the cheapest food they can to sell to the general public. But Ryan, your initial thoughts of Okja?
I was a big fan. This being Bong Joon-ho's follow-up to Snowpiercer, another film of which I am a huge fan. I love how he has become kind of one of the de facto voices on the left as far as filmmaking goes. Obviously, films like Okja and Snowpiercer are about as subtle as a sledgehammer with their metaphors, but it really doesn't matter because there's such a solid grasp on the material, and he really knows exactly what point he's trying to make, and obviously that's to say nothing of his craft. I think all of his films have like this incredible production design and this incredible sense of space. He worked with cinematographer Darius Kanji on this film, who is coming off of some amazing work in The Lost City of Z earlier this year. But I really dug it. I mean, the film is unbelievably eccentric. I mean, there's a completely balls to the wall, and if you ask me, maybe a little too over the top performance from Jake Gyllenhaal in there. But he is really committed and willing to give faith to this auteur. But I think everything, I have a very modest home theater set up in my apartment. I only have two stereo towers, but I really want to highlight the sound work, especially when they're in the mountains in the opening opening of the film. It's really just completely immersive and creative and layered. And again, like Baby Driver, I really hope that I know it's an uphill battle for a Netflix film, especially after the shit show that happened at Cannes earlier this year. But I really got into it, even if as far as the metaphor goes might be slightly too cynical for me, but the journey of getting there and the fact that he can balance all these tones, I mean, there's a lot of great humor in this film, and it is completely nutso, much like the Allison Pill scene in Snowpiercer. But there's also some like irrepressibly dark stuff in there that I really like caught me off guard, and I don't necessarily see it as a negative, but it really just kind of struck me in an odd way.
Well, it's interesting because I think the first half of this film is some of the most purely enjoyable cinema I've seen in many years. And I was willing, oh my God, this is going to be one of my favorite movies, period. And then it definitely loses a bit of its momentum in the second half, although I absolutely love this film and definitely think it's one of the best films of the year. It doesn't have that same energy in the second half, and that's obviously part of the plot, where it takes a much darker turn, and it's understandable. But I feel like the true success of this film is any scene involving Mija, the young girl, and Okja, as Bong does a great job of instantly connecting us to these characters and making us root for them. I really love the sweet relationship between Mija and her grandfather or whatever. There's a great scene in the cemetery early on in the film that works really, really well. But I did want to go back to Jake Gyllenhaal's performance in this, because I've written here Jake Gyllenhaal going ape. I did really like the decision at first, what he was making, because particularly in his introduction scene, he's talking in his typical high-pitched whine, which is basically his normal voice. And then in that opening scene, when the cameras turn on, he instantly turns his voice to like a newspaper man. And I was kind of hoping they would continue that, because I thought that was such a clever way of sort of a commentary, obviously, on the media and stuff like that. That worked really, really well. And obviously, I'm a big Jake Gyllenhaal fan, so I'm kind of biased. I definitely understand why people are just like, all right, well, he may be going a bit too far here, but I guess because it's a Bong Joon-ho film, I guess I was willing to accept it as part of the whole package.
I know, and I think Tilda Swinton, as in Snowpiercer, struck just the right tone with her performance. But I also kind of want to single out Paul Dano, who is just one of the most reliable actors on the planet, as far as I'm concerned. But he plays like the leader of this animal rights activist group that their credo is do no harm to any living creature. So when they, there are these, great rescue scenes where they're going after, and they're like saying, "We're not terrorists. We're not going to hurt you, but we're sorry we have to do this," and they just, use non-lethal means, but it kind of pokes ever so gentle fun at, this idea of conservation and compassion and veganism, etc. But it still makes an argument for it. And obviously, I'm a self-professed meat eater. I have in some moments consider going vegetarian, so maybe some of those elements in the film weren't, maybe it just made me uncomfortable just because of the personal thoughts that had dredged up for me. But obviously in the film is making a case against this corporate control of food, especially in our country. I think that's a horrendous problem, and obviously very using this evil corporation who's doing this under the guise of wanting to cure world hunger. I think that's pretty damning in its own right. And so, like I said, I feel that Bong Joon-ho is a very strong voice in filmmaking liberalism. So I am completely with him all the way, and I really hope he just continues to put out more stuff that's as introspective, I guess we'll call it, in this sense, in a grander scheme.
Yeah, and I think what makes him such a good filmmaker is he doesn't just show, like, the one side of things, you know, with the Animal Liberation Front. I loved the moment where one of the team members was, he wouldn't even eat because he didn't want to leave his carbon footprint on the world, and I don't think any other filmmaker could pull off a scene like that with such a satirical, hilarious edge to it, where he's both talking about, you know, supporting animal rights, but also making fun of these people at the same time, because, let's be honest, some of them take themselves a bit too seriously with all this stuff and take it to many extremes and don't really work. And I just want to call out, like, one of the things that makes Bong Joon-ho such a good filmmaker is his use of characters. All of his films are very character-driven. They're always an eclectic group of characters, and he just has such a great way of emotionally connecting us to these characters, but also just having, like throughout the ensemble of characters, like, every character has at least a moment where you know, you connect to them in some way, or you find out their perspective on the world, which I think is a tough thing to do with large ensemble casts, and he does it really, really well. And I just want to give a shout out to, I don't even know what the character's name is, but he's that driver guy who's, yes, like, yep. Fuck Miranda, which is the corporation that has engineered these pigs or whatever. That guy, like, he was only in, like, barely, not much of the film at all, but I thought he was one of the funniest characters I've seen on the screen in quite a while, and he also pops up in a post-credit scene, and it's amazing, so just keep that in mind.
Absolutely, and even what Bong Joon-ho is able to grab out of his CGI titular character, I think, is incredible. And just, you know, there's like a 10 to 15 minute sequence in the beginning of the film where they establish the relationship between Mija and Okja, and it's really just this really endearing. And so when horrible things happen to Okja later in the film, you start to, like, there is such a genuine sense of terror and empathy for this character, and for, you know, pretty much a giant pig manatee, whatever the fuck, that's pretty impressive. And they just do such a great job establishing that relationship between the two, that when it does take that darker turn later in the film, it just really, really grabs you by the throat.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And I, as I said, I feel like, you know, I feel like the second half of the film does lose a bit of its momentum, but that dark edge that it turns to after the highly enjoyable first half definitely has weight to it. And it definitely affects you as a viewer, like, sort of as Ryan talked about, you know, he's a mediator, as am I. But I can even admit that the film did get to me a little bit in its portrayal of the slaughterhouse environment. So it's definitely a credit to Bong Joon-ho, who's, as we talked about, he's able to balance and, you know, not just give a one-sided perspective of this, but look at it from all angles. And I will say Tilda Swinton is as good as she always is in this film, although I felt like some of those scenes weren't as interesting, some of her corporate side of things, which, I mean, may be intentional. But, you know, the scenes weren't as obviously enjoyable as the journey we follow Mija and Okja on. And I just want to give a shout out to the lead young actress as well, who does a great job in connecting us to her character and making that relationship between her and the CGI creature of Okja feel really real.
Absolutely. They need to be, the visual effects team really needs to be singled out for this too, just because they do a great job. They were given a pretty big budget to work with, thankfully, so the results here are pretty good. But related to the corporate scenes, I think it's a fair point that it's certainly not as interesting as what else is going on in the film, but I really wanted to highlight Giancarlo Esposito's performance, because I think he just gives, like, this droll cattiness to the proceedings that really just adds an extra layer of humor to it. So yeah, even if they were less interesting, they still had those little bright spots in it.
Yeah. And he's an actor that can give a performance even just not even having much dialogue, just with his face, as he's done on Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, just to give a shout out to his other work. But yeah, you're definitely right on. I mean, he's an actor that's always good no matter what role you put in him, and that's definitely the case here with Okja. I don't know if you have any final thoughts on the film, but it's definitely one of my favorite films of the year. I mean, I almost wish that it was just that enjoyable romp it was in the first half. And also special mention to that great action sequence where they're sort of taking, where the Animal Liberation Front sort of takes Okja, and there's some really great humor in that sequence as well. But, you know, the film is just really does have some sort of a bit of something for everyone, and I definitely recommend checking it out, even if, you know, there's definitely some batshit craziness going on in this film. I feel like if you go in with an open mind, you can at least find some appreciation of what Bong Joon-ho brings to the table as a filmmaker.
Just be prepared, because some of it is legitimately disturbing in the most literal sense of the word.
Oh, without question. And with that in mind, we'll wrap up this week's episode. Next week, we'll be sharing our thoughts on Spider-Man Homecoming and Sofia Coppola's The Beguiled.
Thank you for listening. See you next week.